Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak with new conversations in a new year. California lawmakers are back in session in Sacramento today. By the end of this week, we're expecting a new state budget. So typically, our Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler would be quite busy right now, but this is a different year. Ben's put his Capitol beat in the rearview mirror, so to speak. He's starting the new year with a new position at CAP Radio that we'll talk about in just a moment. For now, though, he's in the studio with me with a few reflections on what has been nearly 10 years of covering California politics. Hello.
Hi, Beth.
Happy New Year
to
you.
And to you.
Is it strange to be here today and not down in session?
A little bit. Because session starts this afternoon, typically I'd be here anyway and then going downtown.
That's
I'd
true.
I'd probably be doing both, and now it's just one.
Let's go back, though, a decade, and give me a sense of place as you started this job. And, of course, you were full of the wonder of where you were going to be working, who you were going to be working with. But tell me more about the atmosphere among the legislature.
When I first covered the state capitol, and this happened about a month after Jerry Brown's return to the governor's office in 2011 after several decades out, it really was the beginning of a new era and a pivot point at the state capitol. You had, of course, a new governor and a governor in a new political party succeeding Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger. You had at that point a $25 billion budget deficit that grew to $27 billion before any initial cuts were made. And then you had the start of negotiations. Governor Brown and Democrats hoped that Republicans would agree to place a tax extension measure on a special election ballot. And in exchange, they were dangling things such as regulatory reform, pension reform, and a budget reserve, a spend. I don't think it was a spending cap per se, but it was, you know, some cap on spending that, you know, some mechanism of keeping spending from growing too high. That negotiation did not play out. It blew up a couple of times that March and then that June. And in the end, there was no special election. The taxes did expire. And then there were the tax increases that had been approved under Governor Schwarzenegger did expire. And then the Democrats went the ballot route themselves. They gathered signatures and they ended up succeeding relatively narrowly, but succeeding in passing Proposition 30, which led to, along with a couple of other big things, led to the end of the state's persistent budget deficits. The recession went away. The economy grew. That's the biggest thing. And since then, as the economy has boomed, there's been no shortage of cash in coffers. And so the times have obviously changed. But when I took over, in that moment, there was a great deal of uncertainty about California's future.
So here we are now in California being more in a state of resistance than it had been then. The new governor is Gavin Newsom. President Trump is in Washington. What's the biggest shift or change besides the people in charge?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the biggest shift is the fact that the state has no shortage of money. And it will not always be the case. People have been warning. We have a chart, one of Jerry Brown's old budget charts in our newsroom that the Sacramento Press Club auctioned off as Brown moved on about a little over a year ago. And, you know, he had this famous quote of what he saw ahead. This is as he released his final budget 2 years ago this week. You know, what's ahead? Well, it's, destruction and devastation. So good luck, baby, to the next governor, Gavin Newsom, who then inherited a $21 billion budget surplus and was able to propose a have your cake and eat it too budget. We're not quite at that phase right now. Money is starting to become a little tighter. You're looking not at a $21 billion surplus, but as Newsom will likely propose this week, you know, a single-digit surplus. And a lot of that is one-time money, and a lot of it is not recommended for permanent spending. So the biggest change, other than, of course, you know, personalities, and you've got, the president going from Obama to Trump, and you've got the governor going from Brown to Newsom. You have Democrats with giga majorities at the Capitol. They're not just supermajorities. They are well above supermajorities, particularly in the assembly. Setting aside people, the biggest change is the state's financial shape. It is night and day.
What's the corollary between a budget being tight or debt being high and the amount of infighting among legislators compared to, easier times when money is flowing more freely and individual lawmakers are getting a little more of what they want. How does that measure of fighting stack up?
I would say there are two answers. I mean, the first is the obvious one, that there is a corollary. The second is it's a little more nuanced because personalities do come into play. And lawmakers know when the money isn't there that they're not going to be able to make investments in things they want to invest. They're instead fighting to minimize cuts in their own priority areas. And then a lot of times everyone's seeing their priority areas cut. And then as money starts to come back, it's which areas do you reinvest in or restore budget cuts to first? And then as you kind of get past that step, in the past few years, it's been, okay, new investments. Which areas are going to be prioritized for new investments? So obviously, when money is tight, there's a measure of pragmatism and realism. As money is available, then you do have some more infighting about, you know, well, do you fund childcare or after school programs?
Right.
A lot of times you have to choose between the two.
You talk to individual lawmakers about this tone of agreement or disagreement about negotiating or not being able to. Let's get specifically to that.
Sure. And what I was just talking about to your last answer is largely, you know, the disagreement among Democrats, because right now we have full Democratic control of the state capitol. What we're now kind of pivoting to is whether Democrats and Republicans, to what extent Democrats and Republicans are able to get along. And it's not like everyone, you know, everything was kumbaya. You know, when I took over, you had those persistent budget deficits. There was a lot of pressure from each party's base that, you know, for example, prevented that compromise that we were talking about a little bit ago about in 2011, trying to get some Republicans and some Democrats to make some budget cuts and put a tax extension measure on a special election ballot. But I do think the polarization in California has deepened to some extent since President Trump took over, and that's true of both sides. And then at the same time, you also have examples of compromise here in California to a greater extent, I think, than you're seeing nationally. Mm. We've got a clip from the Cordial Caucus Karaoke Party, which is an annual event that current and former lawmakers of all sides and stripes. And of course, you have Democrats and Republicans. But within Democrats, when you've got such a big block, you've got liberal Democrats and moderate Democrats. And sometimes the harshest tensions are between them. But you have all of these folks getting together once a year at a karaoke night at the legendary institution that is Simon's on 16th Street in Midtown
Simon's.
Sacramento. I spoke in February 2017, just a couple of weeks after the inauguration of President Trump, with former Republican State Senator Tony Strickland. And we were talking about how, you know, lawmakers do know how to disagree without being disagreeable.
If you really want stability, you need to hear what the other side's talking about and have some respect.
But your constituents, your active ones, are pressuring you to go further in one direction or another.
Without question. That's why it's incumbent upon leaders to lead.
Leaders to lead sounds in that translation that he means less firepower and more talk.
Yeah, or at least less sniping, I would say. You know, maybe just not sniping back at each other quite as much. And it's true that, you know, there's a lot of passionate debate, and nobody is suggesting that you shouldn't get on the floor and passionately debate an issue. The question is whether you need to get personal while you do it. Mm. And I think that's true. I am making the argument, and I very rarely, if ever, advocate for anything. But I am making the argument in my Reporter's Notebook piece online and on air today and right here that it is not just politicians and leaders who need to perhaps take a look at whether they could disagree without being disagreeable, but all of us. Regular people at holiday dinner tables, at PTA meetings, wherever you might be in the shopping. You know, if you see someone wearing a Make America Great Again hat at the grocery store, or you see someone wearing a resistance pin somewhere, there's more to that person, or maybe they have a reason for their political views, and maybe it's worth engaging with them. But that's the argument that I would make is, and I think, you know, we heard Tony Strickland say it's incumbent upon leaders to lead. I think that's true, but it's also incumbent on the rest of us too.
You're listening to Ben Adler. He has been Cap Radio's award-winning Capital Bureau Chief, but now he has a new job title. So let's talk about that for a moment. The new position is still at Cap Radio, which everybody's very happy about, but it includes the phrase program director. What are you going to be doing?
So essentially, I'll be responsible for the sound of the station across all, well, we call them platforms in radio speak. What that means is if you hear us on your smart speaker, if you hear us on a podcast, if you hear us on the NPR One app, or if you hear us on the website or that good old-fashioned thing called radio. How we sound, how we promote ourselves, how we talk about ourselves, training and listening back to shows and segments and stories with our colleagues and talking about what we can do, what we're doing well, what we can work on and improve. Those are all things that go into what a radio program director does. And it's a position that we haven't had at Cap Radio in a while. It's one we need as we grow. And this is the great thing. We are growing so significantly at Cap Radio and making investments in journalism and insight and music in ways that we haven't been able to before. But thanks to your support, we are able to. I'm going to be playing a role in the leadership of the content department, which encompasses news and news talk, which is insight and podcasts and music, all of that on classical jazz, modern music going forward.
There are a few things you do advocate for consistently, one being exactly what you're doing right now.
The way I frame it and the end of my reporter's notebook story is in my nearly 20 years as a journalist, I've only ever felt comfortable advocating for two things. Support your public radio station and vote. But right now, I think I'm comfortable adding a third thing to that list, which is just because you disagree with someone's political views, it doesn't make them a bad person.
Let's wrap this up then with a little bit of a conversation that you had with a Senate fellow. It's interesting to talk to young people coming into the political world.
Yeah.
And give a little context to it, and then we'll hear some of the comment.
Sure. So the Sacramento State, which holds our license over at campus here, has a program called the Capitol Fellows Program. They've got Senate fellows, Assembly fellows, Executive Branch fellows, and Judicial fellows. It's a great program. You take young people who come in every year and they, fresh out of college, and you get some classroom experience, and then you get some real world legislative, executive, or judicial branch experience. Could be in media relations, could be in legislation, trying to write legislation, trying to lobby for it, any number of things. And as I started contemplating this story a couple of months ago after I knew that I was going to be leaving the state capitol beat, this was right after the legislative session had adjourned. You had the anti-vax protesters who were disrupting legislative session every day, day after day. You even had one person who I don't want to imply is reflective of everyone necessarily in that group, who threw a cup containing what appeared to be menstrual blood onto the floor. It struck senators. It made the Senate a crime scene on that final night of session. And there was just this uneasiness floating around the Capitol of, well, if a bill is going in a direction I don't like, what are the lengths I might go to, or what are the lengths someone else might go to try to defeat it? You had big battles over worker classification involving AB5 and the dynamics. And so I wanted to talk to a brand new young person who had just completed a fellowship. And so Mina Hanin worked in a Democratic state senator's office. And on the final day of his fellowship last fall, he told me he started out viewing politics negatively because of TV and social media. But he learned that negotiating a bill with opponents often makes the measure stronger.
There's the human side of the person. There's the person themselves. And then there's their point of view. And productive negotiations and productive discussions come from the fact that you are negotiating the content, negotiating the issue, but you're not viewing the person negatively.
It is interesting to think about young people coming into politics in this era of the strife at all levels of government, the resistance. And yet, Ben, sometimes the sparring you did with Governor Brown would end up being the highlight of a Cap chat or the highlight of a conversation. That kind of conversation would really stick in our minds and our memories.
Yeah, to some extent with Governor Newsom as well. That's the beauty of being a reporter. You get to ask these really powerful people hard questions. They don't always like it, or maybe they do like it. And I think Jerry Brown just genuinely loved being contrarian. So he would debate the weather with me. Or one time when I asked him what he was going to, you know, to be more clear about his fourth term agenda in 2014, he went off on a multi-minute rant saying that he has been upfront about his agenda and what he would do. In the end, he was not clear about how he a pledge he had made 4 years earlier about no new taxes without voter approval, that that only applied to that term, his third term, not his fourth. And he ended up signing a tax increase, a gas tax increase, without voter approval. One could argue that that is why reporters should ask questions and really try to pin politicians down. Very wily person, Jerry Brown. He knew what to say and what not to say and to keep his cards tightly held. And Newsom is a different person, just like, I mean, as I think everyone would expect. And he has his own ways of doing things. But yeah, you know, I'll miss that. I'll miss my colleagues here in the Cap Radio newsroom, even though I won't be very far from them. And I'll miss the pros at the state capitol, because there are a lot of pros in both parties, not just the lawmakers, but the staff. And I'll miss working with them as well.
Ben Adler, Cap Radio's new program director, saying goodbye to nearly a decade of covering California politics. But there's a lot of his work, including this story, still online at capradio.org. And Scott Rodd will still be there. So thank you. Good luck. Yes. And in all those ways, wish you a really happy new year, Ben.
Thank you. And we are committed to continuing to cover the Capitol. We're hiring a political reporter right now. So it is not just going to be Scott, although we are so thrilled to have Scott, and he's going to be great.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks.
You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.